Our weekly science correspondent Chris Smith is in South Africa this morning, where he's doing what he does best, making science exciting. South Africa has a shortage of scientists, so Chris is doing a series of science stage shows for the general public. He joins you this morning from Johannesburg. Chris, hello there.
Good morning, Fran.
Chris, what sort of wonderful experiments will you be conducting in there in Johannesburg?
Well, things you probably shouldn't try at home, actually. We're going to put things in microwaves that you shouldn't put in microwaves to explain how microwave ovens work, including light bulbs and strip lights, which is perfect for a naked scientist. We're here in the guise of the Naked Scientist. This is the group that I run in the UK, which is all about making science fun and interesting. We're also discovering how you can turn a vacuum cleaner into a lethal weapon in the form of a vacuum bazooka. We've hitched a load of plumbing
together.
Sounds
very dangerous. Do not bring the kiddies.
It's good fun. No, it is. We're doing it in a school, ironically enough, so the kids will actually be involved and asked to take part. The projectiles we'll be launching will be Play-Doh, however, so they shouldn't do too much damage.
Okay. And elsewhere in the scientific world, Chris, a mystery of travel explained why it's often raining in and around airports. Why is that?
Yeah, well, about 50 years ago, there was a whodunit published in the popular literature saying, what is the origin of these hole punch or canal clouds? People had noticed that there were occasionally these holes appearing in the middle of clouds, and occasionally in some clouds you would see these long linear voids in the clouds, almost like canals, hence the name. People thought they looked like they could be related to aeroplanes, but A, they couldn't peg it definitely on them, and B, they didn't actually have any idea of what the mechanism could be. But now, 50 years later, there's a group of researchers. This is a paper in Science by Andrew Hamesfield, and he's a researcher with the Natural Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado. And what he and his colleagues have done is to go and look at satellite images for more than 90 of these hole punch cloud formations, and then marry up the formation with flight data for where aeroplanes were at whatever time, and they've been able to prove that the planes are there at the scene of the crime in both place and time in almost all of the cases that they've studied. So that puts the planes at the scene of the crime, so it indicates the planes can definitely do this interesting thing to clouds. The question is, why does it happen, and also what impact could it have on global temperatures and cloud activity and so on? So they actually do some really nice modelling studies, and what actually is happening, it turns out, is that when aeroplanes take off and land, they pass through an area of the atmosphere probably about 3 kilometres up, and at this altitude, the temperature is insufficiently low to actually make water freeze, because pure water doesn't freeze, bizarrely, until minus 40 degrees Celsius. So at temperatures above that, you just have supercooled liquid. And when the aeroplanes go through this supercooled liquid, actually the air which is flowing over the wingtips of the aeroplanes and over the propeller tips of propeller-driven aeroplanes is expanded. And when you expand something, a gas, it gets colder. So the aeroplanes actually make the air around them 30 degrees or so cooler. And this is enough to push that air temperature inside these clouds to just below the freezing point, and lots of those water droplets then begin to coalesce to form ice crystals. The ice crystals fall out of the clouds either as rain or snow, and this leaves the hole. But the other clever trick is that when you make ice crystals in this way, because you're taking a gas, the water vapour, and turning it into a solid, ice, you actually release some heat energy, and that heat energy makes an updraft inside the cloud, and the air goes up the middle of the cloud and then down the outside of the cloud, and this makes this hole, with the air circulating up the hole and down the outside of the cloud, and it also makes it snow. And so there's the elegant explanation for what's going on. And when you start asking, well, where do planes go through clouds at this sort of altitude, the answer is within 100 kilometres or so of an airport. So that's why you see more precipitation, either snow or rain, within the 100 yards or so of the airport.
So it all makes perfect sense. And Chris, some fossilised clues about what colour the early dinosaurs might have been.
Yeah, in the last couple of years, there's been some really nice work done where people have put fossils into scanning electron microscopes, and they've been able to resolve very fine detail of the tissue on the surface of the dinosaurs. Many dinosaurs were feathered, and if you look into these feather features in the fossils, you can discern tiny structures that bear a very striking resemblance to things that you see in extant or surviving animals today called melanosomes. Melanosomes make melanin, the pigment which gives hair and feathers their colours. So by looking at the structure of the melanosomes, what scientists are able to do is to say, well, if we compare those structures with the structures that you see in animals around today and look at what colour they are, you can work out roughly what colour the dinosaurs were. Sounds great, and it works up to a point, but the fact is that not all fossilisation processes preserve the melanosomes, and many species have different structured melanosomes anyway, so you can't use one set of data to inform another set of species. You'd have to keep on trying to repeat this experiment for many different species. So a group of scientists publishing in Science this week, this is Roy Wigelius, who's a researcher at Manchester University in the UK, they've actually come up with another clever way of doing this. They use synchrotronic radiation. Now, synchrotron is a particle accelerator. You spin electrons up at very high speed and turn them around a corner. And when you make the electrons go around a corner, they lose some energy, which is emitted as very highly focused beams of X-rays, and you can use that very coherent X-ray beam to excite the surface of a fossil, and what it does is to activate traces of metal which are in the fossils, and melanin actually also binds small amounts of metals, things like copper and calcium and zinc and cobalt, and different coloured melanins have different amounts of these metals in them. So by reading off the colour fingerprint that comes off from the surface of the fossil, you can work out how much of these different metals are there, and therefore you can work out what colour that particular patch of the tissue would have been. And if you subtract the signal from the fossil from the signal in the rock natively, you can work out what's just unique to the fossil and therefore what colour that bit of the dinosaur would have been. And they've proved the concept on a number of dinosaur tissues and also some other more recent fossils to prove that they do seem to be studying and identifying melanosome structures, and therefore this is a really good proxy for what would be otherwise pigmentation.
So just briefly, they're not all grey?
No, dinosaurs, turns out, had some very nice coloration, browns and oranges and white.
How about that? Thanks you very much, Chris. You have fun there in Johannesburg at the school.
We'll do our best and try not to blow ourselves up tomorrow.
Chris Smith joining us, not from Cambridge this morning, but from Johannesburg in South Africa. It's 17 to 7.